All right, rolling into the third hour. Let's welcome in devoted Phoenix Suns fan. Do you think, before we ask him this on air, do you think he has a Devin Booker jersey or has he purchased a Chris Paul jersey?
I think he's got the Chris Paul jersey framed.
Yeah. Is any of that true, Mr. Padilla?
No, I'm not really a jersey guy. They're typically pretty expensive and I don't spend a lot of money on clothes.
What do you have a piece of Suns memorabilia?
I do have, I got a Steve Nash jersey when I was younger. That doesn't really fit anymore, but I had jerseys in the past. So, I don't really have a lot of memorabilia. I won a Twitter trivia thing a while back and got a little swag package or whatever, but included a pair of sunglasses that have since broke. A t-shirt that I've kind of worn out, and things like that. So I don't have a ton, but try to support as best I can.
How excited are you? I mean, we like to talk about the Suns, and unfortunately, the last couple of years we've kind of been on the roller coaster of emotions. But your emotions are pretty good, and even better the morning after they win a key game last night against Utah.
Yeah, it's been incredible to watch, especially just kind of the progression and this team figuring things out and guys stepping up. I mean, heck, you saw Devin Booker stepping up and just locking down on defense and just causing havoc for Donovan Mitchell and whoever he's guarding. Mikal Bridges is in foul trouble and became a non-factor in the game, only played 20 minutes. So Booker stepped up and did the job on defense in addition to what he's doing on offense. It's just things like that. You have different guys kind of stepping up. DeAndre Ayton has been kind of up and down all season long, but that was one of his best games of the season, and against Rudy Gobert, no less. So it's just been pretty cool to see this team come together and see all the pieces that James Jones has brought in and start to come together and really fit. And even a guy like Torrey Craig, who they picked up for nothing from Milwaukee at the trade deadline, he's been huge. He's been one of their best reserves since he came over, and Milwaukee couldn't find a way to get him on the court. So it's just been really cool to see this team come together. And James Jones has done a great job, and Monty Williams has continued to do very well as well, trying to figure this thing out and turn this team into an actual contender.
You don't have to worry about drafting super high in the NBA draft this year, but as we kind of put a close on the NCAA men's basketball tournament, when it comes to the NBA draft, who do you think that's going to be possibly a lottery pick, help their stock the most by the tournament in Indianapolis?
Who? That's interesting.
Well, let me start here though.
Yeah.
Who do you think should be the number one overall pick?
Oh, Kate. I'm Cade Cunningham. I think just the profile, everything he showed. Obviously, like Jalen Suggs is a guy that has got a ton of the hype, and a lot of people talk about him as being that guy or whatever. But I think you swap Jalen Suggs and Cade Cunningham on their respective teams, and Cade's numbers would have been ridiculous. He put up what he did with zero spacing on that Oklahoma State team, and I think that's a lot of the turnover issues were that there's a few concerns here and there. He's not the most explosive, but at 6'8", with his feel and skill level, that's what you're looking for in number one picks and kind of in number one options in the NBA right now. And I think Evan Mobley and Jalen Suggs are kind of the other guys that are in the mix at the top there. And I think Cade's just kind of clearly above those guys at this point.
And I agree with you about Cade. How do you think Jalen Suggs, his game will transition to the NBA?
Yeah, it'll be interesting. He's still, there's obviously a lot there to like, but there's also a lot of polishing he's got to do. And he's young. He's a freshman one and done player. So that's typically the case. But so that's reason for optimism and also kind of areas that he's going to have to work on. He's going to have to be a more consistent shooter. That's for sure. Going to polish up the ball handling a little bit to be able to be a little bit more effective in the half court as opposed to transition, which is always great to have, but games, you can't always run every chance, especially in the NBA, you get to playoffs and things like that. So I think there's a lot to work with there. A lot of it's going to come down to the jump shot and the consistency of it, whether it's the pull-up, whether it's the three-point shot, because I think his body control and, like I meant, especially in transition, but ability to kind of explode to the rim defensively. He gambles a bit, but he's capable of making some really impressive plays on that end with his athleticism and aggressiveness. So he's going to be a fun prospect to watch develop for sure.
Hey, a little bit later this afternoon, we'll all get to first speak to Nate Lenzer, who was just added to Fred's staff for basketball, and they go back a ways, Iowa State with the Bulls. What do you think, and getting to know a little bit of his background before you talk to him, Jacob, what do you think he means to Hoiberg and this current roster?
I think it just, again, it's a guy that Fred obviously trusts and has seen do really good work in the past. And he's a guy that's both on the developmental side and kind of on the X's and O's side. He's made his mark at different stops. So I think this is going really all in on really trying to hammer home the development. Adding another guy, I think Armon Gates is a guy that kind of handled a lot of the on-court kind of hands-on type of stuff. I think Lenzer will probably be able to do a little bit more there. Obviously, this year was tough on Doc Sadler, obviously, with all the precautions and everything, the way they wanted to make it as safe as possible for him. Probably wasn't able to be as into it and hands-on as coaches typically are this season. And so I think this is probably the way they're moving forward with this staff. It's probably a good idea just in terms of maximizing what they're able to do. You still got Doc there in the program, being able to make his mark on defense and just be the character that he is, yeah, that kind of lightens up the room. But you also get another guy that's able to bring a few different things to the table.
And it also, I mean, the roles are clearly defined on this staff. There's one guy, your job is to recruit. Not necessarily get on the floor and do X's and O's. We brought you here because you're a really good recruiter. And now that we know more about Nate Lenzer, what he'll be able to do. What do you think, like if you ask Fred what he does, and I know he'll say head basketball coach, but where do you think his strength is with this program? Is it non-game day, game day? Where do you think he would say, my best strength for our team to be successful is I do this?
That's interesting. I think he's pretty good game day. His X's and O's and some of the stuff he does draw up, and Nebraska's not always able to execute the way that he would like them to, just based on the personnel and skill level at this point. But I think some of the stuff that he draws up, he's really good on the whiteboard. He's really good in terms of his concepts, and that's kind of more leading up to it versus the game day. But kind of the way he wants them to play and the way he's able to teach his style of play. Like, we saw almost instantly the change in shot profile. And especially for, like, a lot of those guys aren't naturally that way, I think. Mm-hmm. Hanif Cheatham is obviously a perfect fit for his kind of rim and three kind of style. But you had some other guys, I think, that were that weren't necessarily that type of player that kind of bought into playing that way and creating the kind of shot profile that Fred wants. And then that carried over to this year again, where this team has done a good job of playing the way he wants them to play. Obviously, turnovers are too high and didn't make as many shots as they need to. But in general, the way they're trying to play and the way they're able to kind of get the shots that they want, that goes back to the way that Fred is able to teach his style of play. So I think it's a combination of kind of just the teaching on the court and then the X's and O's on game day. That's where he really excels.
Hey, so next week gets busy. Volleyball is here. We just talked to Coach Booth, who I know you have a ton of respect for, in the last hour. John Cook has spoke today. You wrote and did a piece with Brandon Vogel about what the road looks like for Nebraska volleyball. Your initial thoughts on their draw in the NCAA tournament beginning next week?
The initial thoughts are it's pretty tough, but then again, it's only a 48-team field. I think a lot of the draws are probably going to be pretty tough, and I haven't watched really any volleyball outside of the Big Ten this season. So I don't have as strong a feel about some of the Pac-12 teams and some of the Big 12 teams or whatever. It's just kind of, you know, the reputation of the program and see some of the players on the team. But like it's certainly going to be tough just kind of looking at it and laying it out like that. You win your first game, obviously you get the bye in the first round, but you take your business there and you're most likely getting Baylor led by Yossiana Presley, who was a national player of the year last year. She is an absolute force. You get past that round, you're looking at either Penn State or Texas. And that's in the Elite Eight. Typically, that sounds more like a Final Four type of matchup. And then if you get there, you're probably facing Wisconsin, who is undefeated, best team in the country, and who swept you three times last season. And obviously, they didn't get their midseason match this year because Wisconsin had to go into a pause. So that's a tough match. And that's a tough road. And that just gets you to the championship game. Then you got to go out and win it. And on top of that, you're not getting the benefit of the fans for the first three rounds. You got to make it to the Elite Eight before you'll get the fans in there. And then even then, it'll be kind of limited based on what you would normally expect for Nebraska playing in Omaha. And you've got to do it all in a condensed schedule where you're playing and then 2 days later, or you get 2 days off and then you're back on the court again. And then you get 2 days off and then you're back. So it's going to be really tough. But that being said, it's going to be tough for everybody. Nobody's going to really have an easy draw. And you're going to have to definitely go out and earn it this year.
You and John spoke earlier this morning and you were on it. Explain to me. So I saw you tweeted that the travel party is limited to 27. How does that impact Nebraska? That seems like a small number because Nebraska's roster is pretty large.
Yeah. Cook said they've got 17 players. So that knocks out a large portion of that travel roster, that travel party right there. And that includes the freshmen who are ineligible. And I saw someone kind of comment back to me. So John said they've had to make some tough decisions and they're going to have to leave Nick Burkhart, who is kind of their guy that does a lot of the social media and video work and produces some of the great content that you typically see from Nebraska in there. And they're going to have to leave their sports psychologist home. And you would think, again, with the grind that this tournament is going to be in a closed environment, a couple days off and then a couple back at it against some really good teams, obviously it's going to be completely different than any tournament they've ever seen. And still got school going on and all this. So you would think having those people, especially because they're closing, media won't be allowed until the Elite Eight as well. And even at that point, they said really limited. So who knows who's going to be allowed in there. They're not allowing any photographers. It's all going to be the NCAA-controlled media. And I think the message was, we're provided with 15 to 20 complimentary images, and then programs can purchase media beyond that. Like,
ooh,
okay. So that's and like putting together like the social media, the video clips, kind of following the journey. Like that's become such a huge part of the way fans are able to enjoy and follow their programs this year, and that's just not going to be a part of it this year, and we're. Media is not going to be allowed in there to kind of document it our way either. We're just going to be watching on the stream like everybody else until at least the Elite Eight. So I understand like it's going to be tough. Like the logistics, like John was talking about that too, of playing in that convention center, where are athletes going to be able to change and all this type of stuff. It's going to be tough kind of pulling this off. Like it's going to be a true club team type feel, but back to the travel party, you have to make some tough decisions because they've got freshmen that enrolled early, and I mean they're not eligible to play. So I saw someone reply to me like I'd probably leave them home and bring bring the sports psychologist.
Mm-hmm.
I get that, but then that'd be pretty tough for me as a coach going to these girls who gave up the second half of their senior year of high school to come in and roll, or that have put in the work all season long in practice to help this team get here. That'd be pretty tough to tell them, sorry, you guys are going to have to stay home and watch because we need the extra spots. So I totally understand why he's not even messing with, all right, who do we bring from the player perspective? So it's going to be tough. I understand it, but I also kind of don't understand. It seems like there was probably a way to still make it safe without restricting it to this degree.
Hey, final question on this, because you know it's been kind of a stop and start season. Nebraska and Wisconsin didn't get to play each other. It would have been nice to have Nebraska, Penn State. Now Nebraska's got this lengthy layoff before they actually play to this point the most important game of the season. In your opinion, has Nebraska, is there a stretch that you can pinpoint, or maybe they're still searching for it, where Nebraska has played the kind of volleyball that we expect out of this group? Is that still out there, or has that happened this year yet?
I don't think it has in terms of consistently. And part of that is, most of it, I think, is the schedule. It's they didn't get a chance to play a few really, really good teams in a row. They didn't get a chance to when they did start playing well, then suddenly they had to take another break, not because of anything in their program, because of their opponents had issues. And late in season, maybe starting to figure something, and then you have an injury, and that reshuffles the rotation, and so now suddenly Jazz Sweet is back in there, and so you're trying to figure that out down the stretch. So, and they've only played 16 matches, so it's heading into this postseason, I don't really know what to expect from Nebraska. They played two ranked teams, and they went 1-1 both those weekends. And so I don't know. It's going to be interesting to see what level this team is able to get to, especially coming off this 2.5-3 week break before they get even play their first tournament game. So I'm curious. I wonder what John's talked about, but just kind of in his own head, kind of what is he expecting from this team? He says they're practicing really well. He loves what he's seeing within their training, and that's kind of his always mantra. We play like we train, we're going to be just fine. And that's going to be the key here is can they replicate what they do against each other within their own practice structure against another opponent.
Probably John's not alone in wondering about that same sentiment about teams that are going into this the bubble to play the NCAA tournament in 11 days. Jacob, as always, I appreciate it. Fantastic work. Congrats on the Suns, and enjoy the weekend. I'm sure we will cross paths as the AAU basketball season starts.
Yep, I'll be there all weekend.
How's your team, by the way?
I'm really excited. I brought back several of my guys from last summer. We went 22-6, I believe, and added some guys that I think are really going to help. So we had good practice on Tuesday. We've got one more tonight. And then we get to get out there and see what we're going to be able to do.
Hey, good luck this weekend and moving forward, and we'll see you this weekend out at UBT.
Yeah, same to you guys.
That's Jacob Padilla from Hale Varsity, AAU basketball coach, diehard Suns fan. It's, you know, what will we see upsets in volleyball because of the surroundings and the, you know, intimate setting?
Yeah.
We could see some upsets. Or we could see now it's go time. And you know what your schedule is. You've made it through the choppy part of a conference schedule, if you're going to play or not. You know you're playing. It's the NCAA tournament. Will it feel like the first three rounds, the NCAA tournament? That may affect some teams. We may see some upsets where you go, whoa. And then on the other side, we may see the Wisconsins and the Texases and the Nebraskas and the Minnesotas just, like usual, just dominate. Mm-hmm. All right, 12-19. Cam Chick. The Nebraska baseball team is coming up next. Mr. Cleanup Hitter of the team that is first in the Big Ten with a weekend series at home against Maryland. Cam will join us next on the Gary Sharp Show on 1620 The Zone.